From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Nearly 2.5 million late-run sockeye are projected to pass through the Kenai River by the end of the month, over-escaping the river by over 1 million fish. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Those numbers concern fishermen like Joe Dragseth, a drift netter in Kenai. He says he worries about the health of the river, and he says it's unfair commercial fishermen have been restricted while so many fish have made it up the river.
Basically, they're essentially taking a living away from us.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game sets both in-river and sustainable escapement goals for the run each season. The philosophy is returns will be best if the run falls between those goalposts. This season, and the last several seasons, the sockeye run has surpassed the upper limit of those goals. This year, the department set an in-river escapement goal of 1 million to 1.2 million for the run. It's projecting 2.4 million fish will pass through the sonar by the end of the month. For Kenai Peninsula set netters, who've had abbreviated fishing seasons due to paired restrictions with the Kenai River King Run, it's been particularly hard to watch.
Seeing that many fish pass our beach is painful. It's incredibly painful.
Eric Nice of Anchorage set nets out of Salamatov. He says set netters could have helped harvest that sockeye run, but he only had 5 days to fish this season and the last couple seasons. Fish and Game closes his fishery early when late-run Kenai King numbers are low.
The Board of Fish has made it abundantly clear that they care about the minimum escapement of the King Run over whatever else happens with the sockeye run. But the hard part with that is they've made the minimum escapement so high it's almost impossible to achieve.
Brian Marston is Fish and Game's area manager for Upper Cook Inlet Commercial Fisheries. He says the department's following the management plan set by the Board of Fish, and that over-escapement might be a consequence of that.
So this is one potential ramification of, you know, the king salmon escapement goals being favored over sockeye salmon goals as listed in the plans.
Marston says it will take a few years for the offspring of the over-escaped sockeye runs to mature and return to really know how those numbers will impact salmon yields going forward. The last 2 years also saw late-run sockeye numbers that went high above escapement goals.
The different curves that we use to predict yield would suggest that when we go over our escapement goal, that we increase the likelihood that we will get lower yields in the future.
That's in part because the higher density a fish population gets, the more competition there is for food among rearing fish. That's what worries Nice.
I think there's plenty of data showing that if you put a reasonable amount of fish in the river, you get great returns, which is really what everyone wants.
Marston says there are some unknowns about how future sockeye runs will be impacted by recent over-escapements, since the department hasn't always dealt with such high numbers in the Kenai River. He says the department will be watching how many fish come back in the next few years, and will then use that information to calculate escapement goals and yield in the future. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, which recognizes the importance of Alaska's sustainable fisheries to the state's economy.
Jeremy Rubing wants U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland to visit Alaska's fisheries. Rubing is a Bristol Bay fisherman, film producer, and activist, and he's coordinating an effort with dozens of other fishermen to write a letter to Haaland inviting her north. The letter explains why fishermen in Alaska are uniquely positioned to contribute to conversations relating to an executive order the Biden administration introduced in January.
What the letter does, it invites Secretary Deb Haaland, who's kind of overseeing the whole effort, to come visit Alaska and visit us in our fishing communities and hear from people and get our input in real time, especially the input of tribal concerns and sovereignty.
The executive order is also known as America the Beautiful. The administration describes it as an opportunity to build climate resiliency by protecting 30% of America's landscapes by 2030. Rubing says the initiative aims to include stakeholders in the conversation rather than imposing top-down policies. He believes fishermen are in a unique position to communicate their experiences.
The letter that we're organizing has dozens of Bristol Bay fishermen. It's growing daily, as well as dozens of folks in the longlining community and organizations in both areas, down the southeast as well as in Bristol Bay. You know, makes the point that, you know, this is our way of life and this is our living. And fishermen are the folks who are on the water and seeing these changes and bearing witness.
America the Beautiful is outlined by 8 principles, from honoring tribal sovereignty to using science as a guide to supporting stewardship efforts of private landowners and fishers. Melanie Brown is a 4th-generation fisherman who grew up fishing in Naknek on her great-grandfather's set net site. Brown is also an organizer for Salmon State. She says America the Beautiful is an opportunity for the fishing community to engage in policy.
By working from the ground up instead of top down, policies are normally created from the top down. This is a new way of introducing to the general populace that, hey, if you have ideas or proposals that you want to bring in, bring them.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Rubing wants fishermen to start conversations about what long-term protections might look like and to work with industry as well as local communities and policymakers. He hopes to have Secretary Haaland visit Alaska this fall to learn more about what's at stake in Alaska's fisheries. The letter suggests immediate actions that include protections for Bristol Bay and the Tongass National Forest. It specifically calls for the EPA to invoke the Clean Water Act protections in Bristol Bay and to reinstate the roadless rule in the Tongass. I spoke to Salmon State's Executive Director Tim Bristol about why that's important.
And then from the Salmon State perspective, I think early on, two places we thought that made sense to really get the best bang for the buck from a conservation standpoint were restoring protections for road-free areas of the Tongass National Forest, since it's such a big salmon producer, and protecting the watersheds that provide the habitat for those salmon is, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. And then bringing Clean Water Act protections, safeguards back to the headwaters of Bristol Bay and essentially put the area off limits to large-scale development from Pebble Mine and perhaps some other mineral deposits. I think those are two places where you could take action fairly quickly and they would be really decisive and have a really significant positive impact over time when it comes to wild salmon production. One of the things that's really interesting about salmon in particular is that connection, you know, they make to the ocean and land.
Well, we certainly see, up north in Bristol Bay, record runs. But when you start from the south, we see off the Pacific coast, you know, alarmingly low runs. We see Canada closing down the majority of their BC fisheries commercially. And then southeast has been having some, you know, fairly low returns too. I mean, are we seeing just marching warmer waters inevitably reaching to the north that are going to be catastrophic for salmon species?
I think when it comes to the future of salmon, we just don't know. And these systems are really dynamic, and salmon are a pretty resilient critter. I think as long as you try to do a good job of protecting habitat and manage your fisheries in a sustainable way, which we've done in Alaska for a long time now, I think you're always going to have a you're going to have a good chance to at success. I'm not one of those at this point that's willing to say that the future of salmon is dire. I think it's going to be challenging, and I think flexibility in the way we manage and the way we pursue these fisheries is going to be important. You look at what British Columbia did, and they just decided to put 60% of the commercial salmon fleet in mothballs, and I just think that's incredibly short-sighted and is the wrong approach, and it's not addressing the root cause or the core issues, right? I think that's really unfortunate. I think that commercial fishermen and bananas is a scapegoat there, and I don't think that will ever happen in Alaska, and I think it's really important, again, to be part of all these processes to make sure that that does not happen. And from a climate perspective, I think it's too early to tell what's going to happen to salmon over the long term. I know that there have been some reports of really poor returns in other parts of the state, but it does seem like Southeast Alaska has been a little bit better over the last few weeks, and I keep my fingers crossed there. And the Yukon I think the only way you can describe it as a disaster this year, so I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done to try to figure out what's happening there and what we can do to improve the situation. I think it's also really important to take a good hard look at the Bristol Bay success story and see if there's certain things that could be translatable elsewhere, but I'm still hopeful.
Well, you made the point that, the knee-jerk reaction when stocks crash is to instantly curtail commercial fishing. But then you also pointed out earlier, and people have observed the success of Bristol Bay and said that, well, a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's a healthy drainage system, where one river is a lot more vulnerable than an entire system, which has a lot more genetic diversity and gives the whole region a better ability to bounce back. And I know you were talking about protecting the Tongass drainage too. I mean, how much is that an essential part of any kind of long-term salmon management, protecting those inland regions?
I think making sure that you have high-quality habitat is going to allow you to rebound from those bad years, those lean years. You look at the systems down south, they just don't have that resiliency anymore. They don't have that ability to recover because the habitat is so degraded, whether it's dams or all kinds of urbanization, farm runoff, you name it. Like the Fraser River in British Columbia, it would have these wild swings where one year it's productive and then the next year it's just in the dumpster, and it doesn't seem like there's any going back. I just saw some statistics saying that something like 85% of the habitat in the Fraser watershed has been degraded to a certain degree by various development over the decades and centuries. And, Alaska has a way different situation in a lot of places. And I think it's a real credit to the way we've managed things. And I think it's a real credit to a wide, broad, diverse group of citizens who have stood up and said, we're not going to make some of the same mistakes they've made in the lower 48. And habitat protection is one of the most important. And I think it's one of the more achievable goals in the short and the midterm.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, reliably delivering for Kodiak since 1964.
Thanks this week to Salmon State's Tim Bristol for daring to speak to me, KDLL's Sabine Pooks, and KDLG's departing Stephanie Maltrich. Thanks, Stephanie. Good travels.